It is a delight to see everyone today. And on the way here, I'm sure you saw road signs, informational signs along the highway. Some of them were warning signs about curves ahead or maybe a regulatory sign, speed limit, maybe a weight limit going over a bridge, or a no U-turn sign, maybe a sign that said railroad crossing, or maybe a height clearance for a bridge. Maybe there was a T-road sign that says, hey, this road's gonna heck gonna make a decision, go one way or the other. Or maybe a merge sign where, as we merged onto the freeway today. Or maybe in some neighborhoods you'll see a dead end sign. A number of years ago, there was a comedian named Bill Engvall, and he had a comedy routine about how some people make it really obvious that they're not all that bright. And so he made a whole comedy routine about how it would be just easier if they would wear a sign that says, I'm stupid. Instead, he goes through the comedy routine about how, you know, somebody sees you with a suitcase at the airport and they say, are you going somewhere? And he'll just say, well, here's your sign, okay? So he has this whole comedy routine. So signs are a part of our life. There seem to be everywhere. The Bible is also loaded with signs. And the first challenge that becomes that is to whether or not then people actually see the signs. And the second challenge is whether or not people heed the signs. So the title of today's message is Signs in the Bible. Signs in the Bible. I want to pose an easy question. Do you have a clock in your house? How about a calendar? Where do you suppose that information came from? If you turn to Genesis 1:14, we can see the basis for clocks and calendars. In Genesis 1:14, and I'm reading today from the New King James Version. In Genesis 1:14, then God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from night, and let them be for signs and seasons, for days and years. So there's a process, and why things were set up the way they are, so that we know how often the sun is going to rise. Well, that's every morning, okay? And we can divide the time out from there. How often does the earth go around the sun? Well, that's what we call a year. A year for other planets has a different length of time than does the earth. There are also signs in the sky. I know that my family has a 1914 history book. Big old thick book from the pioneer days that for the late 1800s in Minnesota. And it goes through all the families and where they came from, and the Martins are all listed in there, and then all the families they married into. But there's a part of that, the history that's in that book, and it's and my dad, well, our family has one of those. There's only three known left in existence, but a big old thick book. It's maybe 5 inches thick, and it tells about an atmospheric condition in the sky. And now Minnesota has named after the Minnesota River, which is shaped like a V. Starts in the Twin Cities, comes down to central Minnesota, south, and goes back up towards South Dakota, kind of a big V. And people in my home area live, if you were to put a dot in the middle of that V, kind of equidistant from that Minnesota River in each direction. And there was an atmospheric circumstance one day where the moisture and the weather was such that people could look in the sky and see a mirror effect of what it looked like 45 miles away in the Minnesota River Valley. They could see, look up in the sky, and they could see a reflection of the houses, the farms, farmers working in the field with their horses. And it was so scary because it was like big screen TV, but it was in the sky. Now, I haven't heard of this. I've heard of strange weather phenomenon. But it was reported by so many people. Some people were so shocked by this, they thought it was the end of the world, and they went out and did things that they shouldn't have done. but it was a shocking phenomenon. It was widely recorded, yet only in that particular area did that occur. So we have more signs in the sky that are revealed in the Bible. In Genesis 9, verses 12 and 13, we have this sign given after the flood, the Noachian flood. And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant which I make between me and you, that every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be the sign of the covenant between me and the earth." Verse 17, "And God said to Noah, 'This is the sign of the covenant which I've established between me and all flesh that's on the earth.'" And what is that? "Well, I'm never going to flood the earth again and destroy everybody." So we have this, there's signs, and which would be a wonder if you see any of these in the sky, and you hadn't ever seen it before. But those are the early signs that are listed in the Bible. Now, we know when we drive down the road that there are billboards. The billboards are big, and they're not intended just for one person. They're intended for large audiences. But there are other signs that are small, and they're intended for only one or maybe just a very few people. An example would be a sign that says, "Posted, no trespassing." Well, that sign is intended for anybody who comes to that particular area. They can see it. They let them know where the limits are. So some signs, like I say, are for the general, for everyone, and some are for specific people or specific circumstances. We also have sign. If you'll notice, the word signature has the word sign as the first four letters of it. In Genesis 17, starting in verse 10, there's a sign about keeping an agreement, a sign of an agreement. Now, when we think of a signature, we think of a signature on a dotted line. But in Genesis 17, starting in verse 10, we read about the Abrahamic covenant, that there is a sign to keep that covenant. And in verse Genesis 17, verse 10, "This is my covenant which you shall keep between me and you and your descendants after you. Every male child among you shall be circumcised, and you shall be circumcised in the flesh of your foreskins, and there shall be a sign of the covenant between me and you." So there's an indication as to an acceptance of this offer of the Abrahamic covenant from God. But signs aren't just those physical signs in that sense. There's other kinds of signs. One of them is personal identification. Now, we generally want your ID. Well, generally you pull out a driver's license or a birth certificate, or if you're traveling, a passport. So how can someone be identified? What is their ID? And it's interesting, if we read in Genesis 38, we have the story of Judah and Tamar and the dalliance there. And Judah was bargaining with Tamar, and in order to pay her for the dalliance. In Genesis 38:18, Judah says, "What pledge shall I give to you?" So she said, "Your signet and cord and your staff that is in your hand." And he gave them to her and went to her, and she conceived by him. So three things that could invariably say this is the exact person. And she took those, meaning in lieu of getting payment. You might say it's collateral, something to hold in the event that he didn't pay up. He promised her a kid from the flock of goats. But then she took off and wasn't around and kept the three things and wasn't able to be paid. So Judah lost his signet, cord, and staff, all very individualized, and all three became irrefutable identification. Later, when it was found out that Tamar was pregnant, and Judah was inclined to give the death penalty to her. In Genesis 38, verse 25, "When she," meaning Tamar, "was brought out, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, 'By the man to whom these belong, I'm with child.' And she said, 'Please determine who these are, the signet, the cord, and the staff.'" Well, That's beyond embarrassment for Judah, because he was now inclined to give her the death penalty. And yet he was the one, and he said, she's more righteous than I, when he acknowledged that those were his, because everybody would have known his identification was on the line. Another way of use of signs is a sign of authority. We look in Genesis 41 and verse 42. And in this time, this was a case where the children of Israel had migrated to Egypt because of the famine in Israel. And in Genesis 41, we've now gone through that Joseph had interpreted the dreams of the Pharaoh. And Pharaoh and explained about how there would be coming 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. And Pharaoh said, somebody's going to have to prepare for all this. So in Genesis 41, verse 42, the Pharaoh took off his signet ring off of his hand, put it in Joseph's hand, and he clothed him in garments of fine linen and put a gold chain around his neck. Well, look and notice there were three things. He gave Joseph, basically making him the prime minister of the land, and he gave him three things to identify the authority given to Joseph, with the ring, fine linen garments, and a gold chain around his neck. That's not something that a guy from in prison would have, any of those, much less the Pharaoh's level of quality. You might say the richest man in the world at that time says, here, I want you to have this authority, and these are signs of your authority. We also have a sign of verification of what God is saying is true, a sign of verification. And we can read about this before the children of Israel left Egypt. We read about in Exodus 3 in verses 9 through 22, and I'm not going to go over all of it, but the explanation here, or where God is saying, I've seen the oppression with the Egyptians oppress them. And he's saying that the Egyptians are going to give the people of Israel silver, gold, and clothing. Three things. Now, we've read about Judah, we've read about the Pharaoh, but now he said, they're going to give you three things. And in other words, as a sign that what I'm telling you all is true. Now, I imagine, this would be hard to imagine, that they've been in Egypt for 430 years, and they gradually over time became enslaved by the Egyptians, the house of Israel. And then somebody tells them, look, you're going to get gold and silver and fine clothing. Now, where do you suppose the clothing comes from? Homespun? Because they didn't have clothing factories. So clothing was expensive, hard to come by, and it's not like you had a different pair of clothes every day for a week or a month or whatever. You had a pair of clothes, and you were happy to have them. And if we read on in Exodus 3 and verse 12, I will certainly be with you, and this shall be a sign to you that I've sent you. When you brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. He's speaking about getting the silver, gold, and the clothing. And if we read on, and we read through that chapter, down to verse 21, and I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and it shall be when you go. In other words, not only are you going to be able to leave Egypt, but when you go, you shall not go empty. Go empty-handed. But every woman, verse 22, shall ask of her neighbor, namely, of her who dwells near her house, articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing, and you shall put them on your sons and on your daughters, so shall you plunder the Egyptians. So there were three things that were promised to them, and they would wear them, okay, put them on. Now, I have done some traveling, and when I international travel, I wear a vest, a fishing vest. Now I see they're advertising traveling vests. Well, I just use a fishing vest. Lots of Velcro pockets, zipper pockets. I can stick passport here, some money there, wallet over here, and all of the things that I carry. And so it says, you're going to carry these. You're going to wear these things out because it's going to be heavy and difficult to transport during that time. So They were promised all those things as a sign of God's favor. If we read then, and we go through Exodus, we can go on and read of all of the various plagues. And each one of those were a sign of relief from God. Now, some of the plagues hit both Israel and the Egyptians. But the relief from those plagues was offered to the house of Israel. We also have signs of responsibility. If somebody is given a responsibility, there is a sign for that. And we read in Exodus 28, and we just go through the chapter, and it's really quite remarkable of the detail that God gives regarding the garments for the priesthood, about the gold and the silver and all of the colors and the ornamentations and what they're like. And it sets them apart as servants of God. And the capacity for them to serve that responsibility is on them, and people can readily identify who the priests of God are. So it's a symbol of accountability, a sign of that. Now, I know that when I started this message, many of you were thinking of Exodus 31, verse 13. Exodus 31, verse 13, a sign of identification of God's people. In Exodus 31, 13, we read, "Speak also to the children of Israel, saying, surely my Sabbath you shall keep, for it is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, that you may know that I am the Lord your God who sanctifies you." We skip down to verse 17, Exodus 31, 17. "It is a sign between me and the children of Israel forever. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested and was refreshed." And of course, if we realize and we read on later in the Bible, we find that those who are children of Abraham is not limited. It's also talking about the spiritual children of Abraham or who are follows in Christ Jesus. And so we have this Sabbath as a sign. Now, if you have a sign on the highway that says, "Dangerous curves ahead, lower speed to 45 miles an hour or 20 miles an hour if you're going through the pig trail in Arkansas," and you were going 70, what would happen if you kept going 70 miles an hour? Things could get really ugly. And indeed, that has happened to people throughout the ages, where they didn't heed the sign with regard to the Sabbath. Now, people have ignored signs throughout history. Years ago, in my office in Los Angeles, I had a co-worker named Dennis. And Dennis was we got along well. I'm a Minnesota native. He's a Wisconsin native. So we could talk cornfields and cold weather. Well, Dennis was explaining when he was a young man. He was out Terre Hooting with a friend of his. And he and his friend had a little bit too much of adult beverage to drink. And they were driving along on a gravel road, a hilly road. And he said, they went off the end of a road because they had come to a T-road. And they went straight off the end of the road. Well, there's a problem there because that T-road was cut into a hill and there was an embankment. And so they went off the end of the road, smack into the embankment. Well, this would be bad enough. And he said, they didn't really know what happened to them because he woke up lying out in a field a long ways, and because of the embankment, he woke up with his head hurting, and he's lying all alone out in a stubble field, a grain stubble field, wondering, what happened? Is this a bad dream? Why am I lying here in the middle of this field? And he didn't see a car. He didn't see his buddy. And then he saw, lying over by the bank, his buddy struggling to stand up, and he was covered with blood from head to toe. Had a little scalp cut, and as you know, head wounds bleed. And he was just drenched in blood. Dennis was pretty good. He was okay. I mean, he got a smacked on the head. And then they went to look at the car. And they looked over the embankment, and the embankment was just the right height. The car hit the embankment, and he said there were two holes in the windshield where each of them went flying out of the windshield. But he said, the miracle was really remarkable because this was one of those models of cars where the engine or the hood hinges were on the front. So when it when you lifted the hood of the car up, you went by the windshield and lifted it up, and the hinge was in the front of the car. And he said, it had to have hit at the exact right moment. When they hit the embankment, their bodies flew out of the car through the windshield, and then fraction of a second after that, the hood came up. And he said, his buddy was driving, and so he got torn up going out over the steering wheel. But he was alive and survived and otherwise generally uninjured. Was daytime. Somebody went and called the cops, and they came and called a tow truck, called them off in an ambulance, and they towed the car to his buddy's parents' house, and all they saw was a car that was smashed in the front with two holes through the windshield. And you can imagine how the parents felt about that time. And I thought of that as an example of people ignoring the signs. Now, they had toxified their bloodstream, so they weren't paying attention to the signs. Even if they saw it, they weren't paying attention. In Numbers 14, verse 11, we have another example of people ignoring the signs that should have been clear and obvious to them. In Numbers 14, verse 11, and we read here that God was exasperated. You ever been exasperated? If you've been a parent, you've been exasperated. If you've been a kid, you know your parents were exasperated with you. Numbers 14, 11, then the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? And how long will they not believe me with all the signs which I have performed among them? Verse 22, because all these men who have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and have put me to the test now these 10 times and have not heeded my voice. God was really very unhappy with the children of Israel. And Moses then, if we read on, interceded and says, hey, you know, please bear with these not very good children. Don't start over with me. Let's work this out. So God was very frustrated when people don't pay attention to the signs. Now, we read earlier about the signs of the priesthood and how they were separated out for responsibility. We have a similar example in Numbers 17, verses 9 through 11. And here's a sign of an extension of God's authority to an individual, not just to a group, but to an individual. And this particular one is about Aaron's rod, the one that budded with almonds, and demonstrated the extension of God's authority. In Numbers 17, starting in verse 9. And this is where Moses had gotten rods from all of the tribes of the children of Israel. Verse 10, and the Lord said to Moses, bring Aaron's rod back before the testimony to be kept as a sign against the rebels, that you may put their complaints away from me, lest they die. And Moses did as the Lord had commanded him. In other words, to show that God was with Aaron and not with the people that were trying to rebel against Aaron, that God had performed a miracle and Aaron's rod had previously budded to demonstrate the extension of God's authority. Now, public events can be a sign. We read that in Numbers 26 and verse 10. And we're looking here at Korah and the rebels who complained and fought against Moses. And it's sort of like that traffic warning sign. Some of them say, T road ahead, as Dennis found out, or as or be careful for the curves or slow down. Some warning signs are so big that there isn't anybody that can possibly miss them. Numbers 26:10, this is what we call the rebellion of Korah. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up together with Korah when the company died, when the fire devoured 250 men, and they became a sign. Who do you suppose the sign was for? Everybody else who was inclined, who might have been inclined to rebel against God's authority. So if you do, this too could happen to you. Now, I don't know about you, but if the ground opened up and swallowed a bunch of whiners and moaners and fussers and rebellious people, and then closed back up again, I'd remember it, okay? Now, I haven't seen that, but I read about it here, and I believe God, so I don't want to be one of those like Korah. Now, we always think of visual signs, but there's also an audio sign. In Numbers 31, we're in Numbers in verse 6, we find that trumpets were an audio signal or sign during a war. In Numbers 31, verse 6, and Moses sent them to war, 1,000 from each tribe, and he sent them to war with Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, with holy articles and signal trumpets in his hand. Now, trumpets are critical in order to perform. How do you send a signal to people who are beyond your eyesight? Sound can carry it, except for deaf people. The sound can carry, and you can have a pattern of sounds. One blast for one message, two blasts, or it's like when I was a kid growing up and we had the old-fashioned telephone on the wall, and we had a party line, and there were eight people on the party line, and everybody had a different ring signal. And in my case, it was like two shorts and a long. So you go ring, ring, ring. And that differentiated our household from all the other eight households in the neighborhood. So you could always hear the phone was ringing, but you were only supposed to answer it if it was your own household. So in other words, you can tell by signals. Same way in a war sign with the trumpets. Now, we can also wear signs. In Deuteronomy 6:8, God says how you can wear a sign that would identify us as being a Christian. And here he says God's law are to be an identifying sign to be worn at all times. So is that a sign around our neck? What does it say in Deuteronomy 6:8? You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. What they're talking about here is a sign of what you do, that's your hand, and what you think, that's the frontlets between your eyes. What's the first thing that comes into your mind? I know that I've been to an auction sale, maybe you have too, I've been to lots of them. And each person who registers as a buyer has a particular, is given a number. And that number is put on a card. So if you happen to be the winning bidder, then you hold up the card and it's got your number on it and identifies you as a bidder. So that's in your hand, that's a sign that you are the bidder. And I've looked at this frontlets, a type of jewelry worn around the head, has like trinkets dangling on the forehead between the eyes. Well, if that is there, that really indicates your thought. But I also couldn't help but think, being a farm boy, about ear tags on cattle. Follows them around everywhere they go. Those are right there. And you can spot them easily. And we use color codes and number letter codes on those. But they're worn on the head. But the sign here is referring to what we do and what we think. Signs are also a repetitive reinforcement. Signs are a repetitive reinforcement. Now, I grew up a long time ago. So Probably anybody under 60 isn't going to remember this, and maybe even people over 60 won't remember. But I remember traveling on the highway with my folks, and we'd come across Burma Shave signs. Now, these were little signs along the road, and they would have clever little sayings, you know, and they would be a series of three, four, or five signs. And the three little things were like a riddle and the answer. And then the last little sign would say Burma Shave, which is a type of shaving lather. And that's how they didn't have one big billboard. They didn't have, that had all their information on one sign. It was a clever little fun saying that was in a series of places down the road. So the so there would be a like a series of three or four signs. The in Deuteronomy 6, verse 22, but when people became afraid, we realized they need encouragement and reminders. In Deuteronomy 6, verse 22, the Lord showed signs and wonders before our eyes, great and severe, against Egypt, Pharaoh, and all his household. A lot of these signs were remarkable, just eye-openers, amazing. In Deuteronomy 7, verse 19, the great trials which your eyes saw, and the signs and wonders, the mighty hand and the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out, so shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples of whom you are afraid. So the comment here was, is God is with you. He's got your back. You're going to face adversaries as you go into the land of Canaan to repossess it where you once were, and you're going back there. It's going to be okay. God has given you these signs as a reinforcement that he's with you. If we move on, we read to in Joshua 4, verses starting in verse 5, a sign can be a memorial of an event. A sign as a memorial of an event. Now, when the children of Israel were crossing over the Jordan River from into the land of Canaan, after they had come out of Egypt, we read in verse 5, and Joshua said, cross over before the ark of the Lord your God in the midst of the Jordan. Each one of you take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the children of Israel, that this may be a sign among you when your children ask in time to come, saying, what do these stones mean? Then you shall answer that the waters of the Jordan were cut off before the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord when it crossed over the Jordan. The waters of the Jordan were cut off, and these stones shall be for memorial to the children of Israel forever. Because you see, the Ark of the Covenant, when they crossed the Jordan River, the Jordan River was stopped up. They crossed over on dry stones. So these stones were kept as a memorial of that particular event. We read on in the next book in Judges, starting in chapter 1. And this one is really a sad piece of history. And this is really about the calling of Gideon to be a judge in Israel. Judges chapter 6 and verse 1, then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord. I'm really, and we see that all over the world today, where so many people are doing evil. What does it say? So the Lord delivered them into the hand of Midian for 7 years. In other words, an enemy ruled over them for 7 years. Not just because, but because they did evil. And we jump down to verse 16, when the Lord said to Gideon, surely I will be with you, and you shall defeat the Midianites as one man. In other words, as you work together. Verse 17, now mind you, it's been 7 years that they have been ruled over by the Midian, by the people of Midian. And verse 17, Gideon said to him, now if I found favor in your sight, then show me a sign that it is you who talk with me. Don't depart from here until I come to you and bring out my offering and set it before you. In other words, don't go away. I'm going to be right back. I really need a sign, because Gideon was concerned that, is this really God who's bringing information to him? Where was God for the previous 7 years? And yet God was explaining here, I'm going to bring you out of this servitude of the Midianites. And so Gideon says, well, I want to make sure it's really you and not some other evil force is talking. Verse 21, and the angel of the Lord put out the end of the staff that was in his hand. Now Gideon had brought a meat and an unleavened bread offering, and says, and so the angel touched the meat and the unleavened bread, and fire rose out of the rock, consumed the meat and unleavened bread, and the angel of the Lord departed out of his sight. That would be a pretty good sign, right? How many people make fire come out of a rock, consuming the offering? Now, verse 36. So Gideon, he's listening here to God and God's angel. In verse 36, if you will save Israel by my hand, as you've said, look, I'm gonna do this. I'm going to put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece only, and it's dry on the ground, then I know that you will save Israel by my hand, as you said. Like, well, I'm still a little cautious here. So if you can make this fleece, meaning sheep wool, on the ground, and the ground is dry, but the dew, the fleece is wet, well, then I'll believe you. Verse 38, and it was so, when he rose early the next morning and squeezed the fleece together, he wrung the dew out of the fleece, not just a little bit, a bowl full of water. Verse 39, and Gideon said to God, don't be angry with me, but let me speak just once more. Let me test, I pray, just once more with the fleece. Let it now be dry only on the fleece, but all the ground around let there be dew. Verse 40, and God did so that night. It was dry on the fleece only, but there was dew on the ground. Those are three indications that God was with Gideon. And then the story goes on, we'll explain how Gideon was able to bring together the tribes and to throw off the Midianites. In Judges 20, in verse 38, this is an unfortunate in Judges 20, where, and I'm not going to go through the whole story, but it was really a war between Benjamin and all the other tribes. And in Judges 20, verse 38, now the appointed signal between the men of Israel and the men in ambush is that they would make a great cloud of smoke rise up in the sky. And this is where they were going to let Benjamin, the tribe of Benjamin, think they're winning while the reserve troops are held in ambush on the side. Then the smoke signal comes up. The army of Israel turns around and goes back to attack Benjamin. So they used what kind of a sign? Smoke signals. Those have been around for a long time. In 2 Kings 20, we have King Hezekiah looking for a sign. And God promised Hezekiah that he would extend his life. 2 Kings 20 and verse 8, and Hezekiah said to the prophet Isaiah, what is the sign that the Lord will heal me, that I should go up to the house of the Lord the third day? In other words, there was a protocol, but Hezekiah is saying, well, I don't know. When somebody says you're going to live another 15 years, you know, is there anything that you can have to verify it? Verse 9, and Isaiah said, this is a sign to you from the Lord. The Lord will do one thing which he has spoken. Shall the shadow go forward 10 degrees or backwards 10 degrees? Now, what we're talking about, the shadow is on a sundial. And on a sundial, you have a row of pegs. You might think of it as a clock that we have that's lying on the ground. And then there's a center peg. And as the sun travels, the shadow goes around on this, as it were, sundial or clock on the ground. In 2 Kings 20 and verse 10, Hezekiah said, "It's an easy thing for the shadow to go down or forward 10 degrees, but let the shadow go back 10 degrees. Anybody here be able to find a way to reverse the clock? Make it go backwards? Verse 11, "So Isaiah the prophet cried to the Lord, and he," meaning the Lord, "brought the shadow 10 degrees backward by which it had gone down on the sundial of Ahaz." Would that make you a believer if all the clocks in the land went back 10 minutes? I was a teenager when I first read Emmanuel Velikovsky's books, Worlds in Collision and Earth in Upheaval. And he was explaining from an astronomical perspective how at that time there was a comet that was nearing the Earth. And it reversed or slowed the rotation of the Earth, and just a moment as a comet was going by affected the rotation of the Earth so that it could, in fact, make the sundial go backwards a few degrees. Now, as a kid, remember that. That was a pretty remarkable thing. Emmanuel Velikovsky has a lot of other interesting phenomenon that compares to the Bible as well. Let's jump into Matthew 12, verse 38. Because this is also a verse that all of you thought about when I started speaking about the word sign. In Matthew 12, 38 and 39 and 40. And this is where the scribes and the Pharisees asked Jesus for a sign. Matthew 12, verse 38. "And then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered, saying, 'Teacher, we want to see a sign from you.'" What they're really asking is, "Are you really the Son of God? Can we authenticate that you are who people say you are?" In Matthew 12, then in verse 39, "He," meaning Jesus, "answered and said to them, 'An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign. There will be no sign given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth.'" So in other words, that's all the authentication you need. You don't have to have me producing miracles all over the place. Although Jesus actually did. He produced them everywhere he went. Signs and wonders, healings, people flocked to him in many places. We read on in Matthew 16, verses 1 through 3. Again, we read about the Pharisees and Sadducees continue to seek a sign. In verse 16, chapter 16, in verse 1. "And the Pharisees and Sadducees came and testing him and asked that he would show them a sign from heaven." Wouldn't that be pretty exciting? A bolt of lightning comes down, zot. See, now we know. And 2, Jesus answered and said to them, "When it's evening, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and threatening. Hypocrites, you know how to discern the face of the sky," meaning you can forecast the weather, "but you can't discern the signs of the times." Of course, you can only see the physical things, but you can't see the issues of character in history. Now, let's compare this to the disciples. Now, the disciples of Jesus also asked for a sign, but they did not ask for a sign of Jesus' authority. In Matthew 24, "Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came up to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, 'Do you not see these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another and shall not be thrown down.'" And we read on in Matthew 24, "As he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately." Now, this is pretty shaken because we're looking at a fantastic temple. I mean, we're talking a grandiose structure. And Jesus said, "There aren't going to be any stones standing on top of each other." The amount of effort it took to build the place in the first place, it's kind of mind-boggling to think that it would be torn down. So verse 3, he sat on the Mount of Olives. Disciples came to him privately and saying, tell us when these things will be and what will be the sign of your coming in the end of the age. They're not asking him to authenticate that he is Jesus, the Messiah. They're asking him, what about this end of the age? And here's where we have a remarkable chapter in the Bible in Matthew 24. And what does Christ say to begin with? Verse 4, and he answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceives you. Warning, that's a warning sign right there. In other words, dangerous curves ahead, maybe T-road, dead end, take care. You will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There will be famines, pestilences, and earthquakes in various places. All these are the beginning of sorrows. Doesn't say the end of sorrows, says the beginning. Looks pretty rough, if you ask me, already at that point. Verse 9, then they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. I can't help but think of, put a little asterisk there, and think of the poor church members in Bangladesh, about people will hate them and try to kill them. I'm sure the beatings were not gentle. Okay, the word beating itself is not a pleasant thought. And many will be offended, verse 10, and will be offended, will betray one another, will hate one another. And many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. What's lawlessness? Oh, we don't have to keep God's law anymore. That's all done away with. We can worship God however we wish. And really, that becomes lawlessness. And the love of many will grow cold. In other words, it's not all that important. And yet Jesus Christ said, "You will, if you love me, you will keep my commandments." He also said that if you... if you love me, you will love one another. In other words, you're going to be bear in mind to treat each other well. Verse 13, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. So it's an endurance situation. Verse 14, and this gospel, what's the word gospel? Good news. Have we been hearing good news? Well, he's referring to good news, but it sounded like bad news. But the bad news comes before the good news. This gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all nations, and then the end will come. So we have good news is coming after the rough patch. And he goes through the rough patch. It's called the Great Tribulation. Verse 15 talks about the abomination of desolation and the details with regard that. Verse 23, look, here is the Christ, or there, don't believe it. False Christs and false prophets will arise, and interestingly enough, will show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, the very elect. See, I've told you beforehand. So you've been clued in, which means false Christs and false prophets can, in fact, perform great signs and wonders that would deceive people, if it's possible, even the very elect. So, do we want it to be possible with us, or would we rather not go that route? Verse 26, if they say to you, look, he's in the desert, don't go out, or he's in the inner rooms, don't believe it. For as lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so will the coming of the Son of Man be. Well, when the lightning flashes, the whole sky is lit up. And so everybody's going to know it when Jesus the Messiah returns. Verse 29, after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon won't give his light, stars fall from heaven, the powers of the heavens will be shaken, and the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. Kind of like that lightning that they talked about. A huge sign. Verse 31, he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, so there's going to be noise, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. Now, that's pretty dramatic, because it got a lot of action, If you want to watch an action movie, you can make a lot of it right out of that one. A lot of action there. Verse 32, it talks about the parable of the fig tree. And figs are an unusual type of fruit. And that a lot of times we think of a fruit tree, we think of the flower coming out and it's pollinated, and then the fruit grows throughout the season. But with a fig tree, when the fig, as we read in verse 32, the branch becomes tender and puts forth leaves, you know summer's near. You know that there's going to be fruit. You know what's coming. So it's, in other words, it's as obvious if you read the signs. That's the nature is right in front of you. Verse 36, it goes on to say, you don't know the day nor the hour. That doesn't mean you don't know the week, month, year, season, but it says the day there. In other words, you should be able to discern what's coming. But as in the days of Noah, so shall the Son of Man be. And it goes on to verse 38. People were eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they didn't know, meaning they paid no attention to the signs given to them until the flood came and took them all away. And so will the coming of man be. I want to give another example, and I would encourage you to read the details in Matthew 24. Now, there's a fellow by the name of Zacharias, an older man, and his wife was older, and an angel came to him and said, by the way, you're going to have a son. And he said, what? What is this? I'm an older man. My wife is an older woman. And in Luke 1, I'm going to start in verse 18. This man, Zacharias, said to the angel, how shall I know this? For I'm an old man and my wife is well advanced in years. In other words, he was incredulous that the angel would say that he was going to have a son of some importance. Verse 19, and the angel answered him and said, I am Gabriel, who stands in the presence of God and was sent to speak to you and bring you these glad tidings. But behold, you will be mute and not able to speak until the day these things take place, because you didn't believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their own time. Well, this baby that was about to be conceived and born was the future John the Baptizer, who was born, what, some 6 months ahead of Jesus the Christ. So when it came time for John the Baptizer to be born, in Luke 1, verse 61, they asked the mother. The father was mute. He couldn't talk because he was disbelieving the angel of God. And so, verse 61, they asked her, what shall we name the child? And she said, well, we're going to name him John. And verse 61, they said to her, but there's no one among your relatives who is called by this name. In other words, that's puzzling. Now, when I grew up, everybody was named after a relative. There was four boys in our family. And now each one of us had our individual first name, but our middle name had to do with a grandparent, uncle, great-grandparent on one side of the family or the other, so that we all had a family background or family name. And in fact, it was a custom in my German neighborhood that everybody would have a child, they would name it after the father's brother, which got rather confusing for me as a kid. Are we talking about the uncle or the nephew? Would that be Ed the nephew or Ed the uncle? Would that be Alvin the nephew or Alvin the uncle? And you can go down the line, and my dad explained to me that that's was the how they did it in that neighborhood at that time. So, in verse 62 in Luke 1, they made signs to his father what they would have him called. What are you going to name the baby? Verse 63, and he, meaning Zacharias, asked for a writing tablet, and he wrote saying, "His name is John." And they all marveled. Well, and immediately after that, he was no longer mute. In other words, he somehow became a believer in the angel of God. So God has given us signs and wonders and patterns of signs throughout the Bible. And unfortunately, people overlook the signs, or they simply disregard the signs. Now, what Jesus said about people needing signs, we look in John 4, and starting at going from verse 43 to 48. It's interesting, in verse 43, after 2 days, he departed from there and went to Galilee. Now, and this is an interesting verse, verse 44. For Jesus himself testified that a prophet has no honor in his own country. Of course, he was raised in Galilee. Who's going to believe him? Right? In his home, he's just a hometown boy. Well, he grew up next door, down the street. Verse 45, so when he came to Galilee, the Galileans received him, having seen all of the things he did in Jerusalem at the feast, for they had also gone to the feast. Verse 46, Jesus came to Cana of Galilee, where he had made the water wine. And there was a certain nobleman whose son was sick at Capernaum. And when he heard that Jesus had come out of Judea to Galilee, he went to him and implored him to come and heal his son, for his son was at the point of death. And Jesus said, frustrated, says, unless you people see the signs and wonders, you will by no means believe. In other words, what does it take for you people to become believers? Do you have to see a sign or a wonder every time I turn around? And yet people lean in that direction. Well, there are signs all around us in life, whether they're road signs or traffic signs, which are there for our safety. We have billboards, store identification signs to direct us to goods and services. We have signature lines on contracts to authenticate our agreement. We have personal identification. There are signs in the sky to help us forecast the weather and other phenomena. We've given the signs in the heavens to establish clocks and calendars. We've given the sign of a rainbow as a reminder that God will never again flood the earth. And there are signs of the extension of human authority from one person to another, whether it's a signet ring or the robe or whatever. And there are signs of priestly responsibility such as garments about responsibilities given by God. Then there are signs that verify God's promises. In other words, I said this was going to happen, and then here's a sign it actually did happen. But how we live our lives is a sign of our belief and acceptance of the laws of God. We have the universal sign of the weekly and annual Sabbaths to identify God's people. So with this many marvelous lists of signs and the coming of the end of this age, I would encourage all of us to read, digest, and understand the book of Matthew, especially chapter 24, as we follow up with the question as to what the apostles said. What are the signs will be of this coming of this end time?